Thanks, Nathan. This is Marilyn Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. The world has been watching as the Ebola virus has swept West Africa, claiming the lives of more than 1,800 people, infecting at least 2,000 more. The World Health Organization has predicted that as many as 20,000 people could be infected with Ebola by the end of the year. It's the worst outbreak of the virus ever, and doctors, scientists, and nonprofits and governments are trying to figure out how to control it. Underneath those questions of containment and treatment are some ethical questions that many say are an important piece of the picture. Some of these ethical and practical questions will be addressed in just a few hours at noon at a Johns Hopkins University panel on Ebola and ethics. And joining me now to talk about the issues is Dr. Nancy Cass, professor at the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics and Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dr. Cass, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Sheila. It's great to be here.
And also with us in the studio is Tim Robertson, a doctoral candidate in the Department of International Health at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He spent 2 weeks this summer studying the Red Cross's Ebola response efforts. Welcome.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks.
So, Tim, tell us where you were and describe what you saw. How were people's lives being affected?
So we were asked by the Red Cross to go to Guinea. To look at the different activities that the various organizations were conducting there on the ground, to see what was working well and what wasn't working so well. We went to the capital, Conakry, but also Gekedu in Guinea, where the outbreak started. And we spoke to community members, volunteers, and the staff of these organizations. I would say one of the big things that we learned from this is just the huge importance of building relationships with people in the community and building the trust of the people in these areas. Because if you imagine, villages in these areas are quite poor and people have limited access to healthcare and health facilities. Some of these villages, there might not be anyone in the village, for example, who even owns a car. So if you can imagine suddenly one or two big white Land Cruisers turn up and people jump out with protective equipment on and ask to speak to people and tell people that they can't touch, you know, each other if they're sick or feverish, these sorts of things, and asking to people to go to come with them to go to treatment centers. It can be, you can imagine that it would be quite shocking and, you know, sort of an extraordinary event for people in these villages. So as a result of this, you start to see that people are, there's developing mistrust towards international organizations. And given what we're asking people to do, as in go to health facilities if they're starting to feel sick or feverish, you know, that requires a lot of trust between the international community and people on the ground. And not only the international community, but also the local organizations working there.
And that's what you saw. You saw that trust
and
wasn't there.
In some villages, but in other villages, I think villages have understandably become afraid. And several villages have simply bunkered down, or at least when we were there at the time in July, had bunkered down and weren't letting anyone into their village from the outside. And if you imagine people in that village are starting to get sick and not letting any health workers in and refusing to go to seek care, it creates all sorts of problems. So, I would say that at that time, the people we spoke to were talking about really re-energizing efforts to speak to communities, explain the disease, explain how it's transmitted and what they can do to protect themselves, and slowly by slowly building back this trust.
Dr. Cass, we know that two Americans infected with Ebola received an experimental drug called ZMapp. There's been some criticism about that. What are the ethical issues in that decision?
So it seems to me that there are some very special responsibilities we have to the healthcare personnel who are willing to jump in the context of an outbreak that is contagious and has a mortality rate of at least 50%. I totally understand why people thought that it was unfair that the employer for these two Americans, Samaritan's Purse, was able to airlift them back to the United States and give them high-quality supportive care that probably saved their life, arguably, maybe instead of the ZMapp. We'll never know, when there was not a mechanism to airlift all of the West Africans, tragically, to a comparable facility. But it seems to me that if an employer then or now is going to ask people who's willing to go serve in West Africa, there need to be very special commitments, not only to provide them with the best training and protective equipment that is available, but also to make commitments that should they get sick, we will take care of them. Now, in making this particular decision to not only airlift them out, but to try this experimental treatment, it's a very unconventional decision. As probably you are well aware, medicines in this country first have to go through safety testing before they can even be given to sick people on an experimental basis. And this decision bypassed that usual strategy.
And this was a decision by the pharmaceutical company?
I
by the maker?
Don't think so at all. So I can't say with certainty. I'm fairly sure that the doctors in charge of his care and potentially his employer looking out for him tried to find out whether any experimental treatment could be made available. My own sense is it is not in a company's best interest to start administering their drugs before they've been tested for safety. They honestly just put themselves at risk in case something goes wrong. There's a real reason not only for the safety of the public, but for the company as well to go through the proper kind of testing. If something goes wrong, it's problematic for them. So my own sense is that they were themselves agreeing to what was thought to be a humanitarian request to see if these patients could have access to the drugs.
On WIPR, this is Marilyn Mourning. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Dr. Nancy Cass, professor at the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics, and Tim Robertson, a doctoral candidate in the Department of International Health at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We're talking about efforts to control the Ebola outbreak and the ethical dimensions. I read a summary of an article you've written about the ethical situation you were just describing, and you used a word that was new to me, supererogatory, which essentially means above and beyond the call of duty. And you used that to describe the American health workers who got that extraordinary treatment. We are hearing a lot of voices. I'm interested, Tim, in what you think about this. Just this morning, NPR interviewed a health worker in Africa who is furious that the rest of the world is not sending more people to help. He said, we don't just need advice, we need help. Is there an ethical obligation that the rest of the world has to take such an extraordinary risk?
So on the one hand, I think it's easy to say, yes, there is an ethical obligation that the rest of the world has, both out of compassion and also, quite honestly, out of self-interest. We live in a global world. This is an infectious disease. And even if the only thing that Americans or Europeans cared about was protecting themselves, it would be in their interest to contain the epidemic as quickly and effectively as possible in Africa. What's harder is to translate that into real life and say, well, if there is an ethical and almost sort of policy mandate to go forward, what does that really mean? Who are the people? Now, there are clearly people who work for our public health agencies who probably would be higher on the list. It turns out there are NGOs, nonprofits, that have quietly devoted their selves and their mission for decades to helping in tough situations like this.
Tim, I want to take it, we're rapidly using up our minutes here, and I want to take advantage of what your insights are about what the greatest needs that you saw when you were there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, again, coming back to what I said earlier, just about continued communication.
I guess I'm asking what needs are the world ought to be addressing.
Okay, well, when I spoke to international organizations there on the ground, they talked about very real human resource issues as well, which echoes what you said. So simply finding staff to come, and even if it's staff, logistical staff, for example, housed in Conakry or the headquarters, and also logistical support, even vehicles and more personal protective equipment is much needed. because, you know, without vehicles, volunteers can't get into villages, can't do effective dead body management, can't trace people who have had the disease, that sort of thing. So these logistical issues have real implications.
I'm going to ask you, in the tiny amount of time we have left, what has not been getting enough attention? Dr. Cass?
Well, I actually think that what Tim spoke about first has not been getting enough attention, which is how to involve local people in getting advice from them about how to do better communication. It seems that if we don't have public health cooperation in terms of when to go to the clinic, how to handle bodies, there's no way we're going to get ahead of this disease. And I haven't seen much reporting on how to get local people to provide input and guidance and then participate in that messaging.
Tim, can I ask you to give a very short answer? What do you think is not getting enough attention?
Well, I think we've got to remember this is a very real human experience. And to ask someone if they're starting to get sick, not to touch their family and to go to the health center immediately, that's just, it's just, we can't forget what a sort of human experience that is.
Yeah, you made that clear. I appreciate you both talking to us. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Dr. Nancy Cass is professor at the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics and Bloomberg School of Public Health. Tim Robertson is a doctoral candidate in the Department of International Health at the Bloomberg School. The discussion at noon will be streamed live online. Go to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. We'll have a link there. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us on 88.1.